places. Everyone.
We're now broadcasting.
Roll the tape in. 3, 2.
A new audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio is where stories come alive.
Decrepit fairy and the magic of Chikushan. Reko's Celebration Day Speech. An original story by Appaloosa Radio. From the Continuing City of 4000 Spies series.
Warmest greetings to the Honorable Chikushan people of Rush 858 on this most special day of celebration, for your liberation from tyranny. I bring the special greetings from my father, the 19th Great Nobleman of Sasko, affirming the unique and personally strong bond between Rush 858 and the Dominion of Sasko. Not only are we proximal neighbors, we are also close friends. Our peoples intermarry, trade with each other, share technological innovations, and defend each other's freedom in an epoch fraught with endless military conflicts. We are especially appreciative of the role that the Yukimonogakari warrior monks from the Bed Boba, Ajop, Abbey have played in augmenting the military defense forces of Sasko. We are a small dominion with a small military, but our friends, the Yukimonogakari warrior monks, have been of incredible benefit to us, helping to ensure victories when defeat seemed most probable. I am pleased, on this most special occasion, to have been invited to retell the story of MNP Farfaya Kronbo Gutch. I will begin this retelling by sharing how it ends. Today, we have the fertile and lush planet, Rush 858 that you call most beloved. More importantly, we have the free Chikushan people who inhabit this lovely place. After this great adventure, MNP Farfaya Kronbo Gutch came to Sasko, became a citizen, and began an emporium, one that still exists today. On my way to this event, I stopped by that emporium and purchased the supplies that I needed for my trip. Three of his direct descendants have served as primary minister to the great nobleman of Sasko. And, Today, one of his direct descendants serves as the elected sovereign for Rush 858. Congratulations and best wishes to her sovereign presence Disme. So, the story I am sharing ends well. However, with so many positive and fruitful consequences of this great adventure, I believe I need to remind you of the very dismal circumstances of its beginning. Faya, as almost everyone called him, was in prison, a literal hellhole operated by the brutal Knot of Vavra.
You have committed grave crimes against the state. You have smuggled forbidden goods, and then sold those goods for ungainly profits. By so doing, you have brought harm to both the magnificent leader and to the state. In the opulent army's endeavors to locate you and your clandestine craft, much disorder has occurred. For those crimes, you will be punished. Daily at the same time for at least the next 412 cycles. Maybe longer. If the court so orders.
Might you be willing to shorten it a bit for some loose coins? Maybe 25,000?
Are you attempting to bribe an official of the state? For that, I am increasing the punishment to at least 647 cycles and doubling the intensity of your pain. Remember that the next time you attempt to bribe an official of the state,
should have known that he would not take less than 50,000. Still MNP Farfaya. Kronbo Gutch, knew that his offer was being seriously considered. The nefarious machine that was intended to bring him intense pain had been switched off. Faya could not let them know that he knew. So, he screamed and moaned as if he were in the most intense pain. To make it even more believable, he even urinated in his prison uniform. That way, they could see, and smell, the effects of their actions. The Knot of Vavra viewed themselves as a revolutionary force, freeing those that they had conquered from their previous bondage. Their most magnificent leader frequently told them so. The conquered peoples must be freed from their archaic customs, from their ancient religions, from their strong ties of duty and obligation to their extended families. They must abandon their traditional agricultural arrangements and adopt the new ones as the most magnificent leader required. The conquered peoples must learn loyalty to the most magnificent leader and his carefully selected minions. They must learn their overarching duty to the state. They must take full responsibility for work assigned to them. They cannot be allowed to be slackers. All must always work. Work for the glory of the state. Work for a better future. A future where all the past is eliminated. The most magnificent leader has spoken.
The territory of Chikushan has flourished in the shadow of the monastery for 10,000 generations. They have protected us, and we have fed them. Their magic and their goodness have brought peace, prosperity, and plenty. We all know what fierce and courageous and intractable warriors the monks have always been. But when the Knot of Vavra came, they brought a magic that the monk warriors could not defeat. They brought unknown weapons and destruction of a most terrible kind. And now the proud and strong and beneficial monk warriors have been reduced to the most desperate level of slavery. With them, the territory of Chikushan has been reduced to a wasteland. Torture. Famine. Dishonor. Disease. Ethical immorality. Because of the Knot of Vavra, Chikushan has gone from the best of times to the worst of times. Gone from the finest of territories to the most miserable and forlorn. Our three red suns had always brought clarity and purpose. Now fog, vapors, and haze cloud our vision. We lack clarity. We lack purpose. We are most forsaken.
On Chikushan, time has always been measured by the movement of the largest of the world's three suns. When this largest red sun has become a tiny speck, Nino Nando, the long night, occurs. 100 long nights creates an epoch. The smuggler, MNP Farfire Cronbow Gutch, had been imprisoned by the brutal Nada Vavra for nearly two epochs. His title MNP represented his vocation. He was a master navigation pilot with special expertise in guiding transport craft through the treacherous, and ever-changing, AD 4512 asteroid fields. By his own reckoning, he had made nearly 3,000 trips through the asteroid fields, bringing necessary supplies to the many villages of Chikushan. No one knew the AD 4512 better than Faya. It was that knowledge that made him such an effective smuggler. To call Faya a smuggler is a misnomer. Before the Nada Vavra, there was no centralized government, just various city-states and scattered villages. One overlord of a city-state might wish to raise some additional cash by taxing imported items. Faya was an expert in avoiding paying those taxes. He would ensure that the desired items reached their buyer in a way that avoided paying taxes. Often he unloaded his cargoes in small villages that were well beyond the city-state seeking the taxes, and then hire locals to transport them to the final buyer. That meant the village locals welcomed him since it brought extra income to them. The end buyer loved him because he delivered merchandise without the burdensome taxes. Only the overlord who wanted the extra tax income viewed him as a problem. All of that changed when the Nada Vavra invaded Chikushan and replaced the traditional patterns with a brutal and very centralized structure of government. Every decision, every action, every transaction was dictated by the state. The most magnificent leader and his minions controlled everything. Nothing was left to individual choice. Everyone wore the same clothing. Everyone ate the same foods. Everyone was provided the very same information. The state dictated everything, entirety, in every respect. So, a trap was set and the smuggler, the master navigational pilot, Faya, was captured and imprisoned. Step 1. Step 2. Step 3. Step 4. Step 5. Step 6. Wool. Stoop down. Touch the floor. Stand up. Turn around. Step 1. Step 2. Step 3. Step 4. Step 5. Step 6. Wool. Reach way up. Touch the pink brick. Hands down. Turn around. Only 9,845 times more until lunch. If you can call that worm-eaten garbage lunch. Lunch. Then torture. Then back to the cell. Only 9,845 times more until lunch. Step 1. Step 2. Step 3. Step 4. Step 5. Step 6. Wool. His cell was exactly 6 steps wide and 6 steps deep. It had a slop jar that they never seemed to empty, and his straw-filled mat contained 10 billion different kinds of bugs. He knew because he had individually counted each. No window. A single light embedded in the ceiling, way up. It flickered. Occasionally, it flickered on, but mostly it flickered and then went off. The only times that his guard spoke to him was just before the torture sessions. Then, it was not that they said real words. Just a maniacal squeaky laugh that sometimes sounded a little like words. He had been in this place for nearly two epochs. 181 long nights. 181 cycles of lunch, then torture. Just back and forth in his cell, 9,839 more times until lunch.
You guys are a little early. It must be a while before lunch. Are you changing the routine on me? Just when I think I've got it down. Now you change things up.
Two guards enter the tiny cell together.
They point to the straw mat, ordering Faya to sit there, away from them. Then they toss a package at him. It is wrapped in brown paper, tied with string. Then, they exit, locking the metal door behind them. Oh, Woody. A special present. Wonder what it could be. Maybe it is my birthday. Sure nice of them to remember my birthday. Oh, it is a uniform. The uniform of a Nata Vavra military officer. Looks like everything is here. Why would they give me a uniform? Maybe the chief guard is accepting my offer of a bribe. Probably should look through the pockets. A sulfur match. Haven't seen one of those in a very long time. Good for lighting a fire. What's this? It looks like a marking device. Okay, my friend, MNP Farfair Kronbogach, what are you going to do? Looks like you have all you need for an escape. I think the marking device is a way for me to pay the bribe. I'll draw a map to where some of my coins are hidden. When I make my escape, I'll be sure to leave it behind, so they just happen to find it. Just happen to find it. He ripped off a section of the soiled cover of his straw map and spent the time before his torture session drawing a very precise map. On its top, in large characters, he wrote 35,000. The afternoon torture session went as usual. Then, back in his cell, he changed into the Nata Vavra military uniform and used the sulfur match to set his straw mat on fire. Then he started yelling loudly. When the guards rushed in, he hid behind the door. When he saw they were preoccupied, he bolted out. He ran down the corridor and when he came to the outer metal door, he opened it, knowing that it too was left unexpectedly unlocked. In the military courtyard, he moved with ease. Soldiers of the Nata Vavra military never look at an officer in the face. Their gaze is always downward. Nor did anyone seem to notice his extreme height. Out the main gate, he turned toward a wooded area that he knew well. Once there, he crouched in a culvert until the various search parties had exhausted their activities and had returned to their base. Faya knew that someone would be executed because of his escape. But, the individual who was executed would not be who planned and who profited from it. His detailed map would conveniently lead a senior officer to where the 35,000 coins were to be found. Faya knew he was safe from any further search parties.
Again, I thank the most honorable Chikushan people for allowing me to retell the story of your liberation from the tyranny of the Nata Vavra. At this point in the story, I must introduce a group of characters that many call the villains of the adventure. Most certainly, they were not motivated by noble motives. Their worldview was always cash on the barrelhead, now, immediately. And, the historical evidence clearly shows that they were at one time in league with the Nata Vavra. Still, the Chikushan people would have remained under tyranny if the Abaye Feng family had not provided that most important tool, the decrepit transplanetary fairy craft, originally named the Lucky Six. The Lucky Six was an old thorium-powered craft that had to be refueled often, and often was subject to major breakdowns. She could barely make light speed. She was designed for unobstructed vacuum space. She was not designed for navigating the treacherous AD4512 asteroid fields. And, as I said, the Lucky Six was owned by the very disreputable Abaye Feng family.
What's this? I searched all of the uniform's pockets several times. I did not see this. It is an unused ticket for the interplanetary ferry, the Lucky Six. Very strange. I just reached in the main pocket, and it was there. I am sure that it was not there before. Ah, the Lucky Six. One of the several antiquated bucket of bolts operated by the Abaye Feng family. I know them all very well. The father, Abaye Feng, and his sons, Raiji and Nezuka. In my business, I have had many transactions with the Abaye Feng family. Cheats. Deceivers. Not to be trusted. Most certainly in league with Anata Vavra. This ticket that I just found is for the Lucky Six. It now runs a ferry route from Chiku Shan and the principal home world of the Nata Vavra. It is always crawling with soldiers and the worm-like Enku who serve them. Still, this unused ticket intrigues me. Yet, I have just escaped from a Nata Vavra prison. Why would I even think of an excursion onto the Nata Vavra home world on the Lucky Six? Strange to have such thought. The master navigation pilot kept asking himself the same question. Since the Lucky Six does not go to anywhere that I want to travel, why would I want to use this ticket? Still, he could not stop thinking about the Abaye Feng family and about ways to make money from them. Or was it to make money with them? Maybe their connections to the Nata Vavra provided a way to make money. Maybe a way for them to both make money. Then, a smuggler's plan emerged in his mind. At the very earliest light after the Nino Nando, the long night, Fayu walked into the offices of the Abaye Feng and Sons Shipping Company, straight into the private rooms of Abaye Feng himself, while wearing his Nata Vavra military officer's uniform. Abaye Feng, I have a plan for your equipment. A plan that makes you money. Also makes me money. And provides invaluable assistance to our mutual friends, the Nata Vavra. Raiji, be a good son and close the door tightly. No one else can be allowed to hear what I am saying. Faya did not know it, but his actions were now being governed by the magic of the Yukimonogakari warrior monks. When the Nata Vavra warships arrived, they brought a new type of magic, one that neutralized the traditional magic of the Yukimonogakari. They also brought weapons never seen before on Chiku Shan. The once proud and strong and beneficial monk warriors had been reduced to slavery. Yet, the Yukimonogakari had previously unknown powers they had not yet used. By deep and focused concentration, they could affect the will of others. The Nata Vavra guard captain became more willing to take a bribe and to reduce the torture settings on his prisoner because the monks had focused their concentration on him. The master navigation pilot became willing to initiate a dangerous escape when they focused on him. Now even Abaye Feng became willing to consider a business opportunity that if he is caught by the Nata Vavra, could result in his immediate execution. The Yukimonogakari have shown that they can control the will of others. They may have been forced into slavery, but their potential remained untold. Focused concentration literally moved mountains and calmed the stormy seas. Abaye Feng, the plan is simple. On one particular trip, when the Lucky Six docks in the Nata Vavra home world, we will not accept passengers for the return trip to Chiku Shan. Instead, we will tell them that the craft is broken and needs to go for repairs. Then, we will pilot the ferry to location P-595 in the AD-4512 asteroid fields. Where we will load a special clandestine cargo for Commander Lin Gu Latin of the 77th Military Corps. We will transport the cargo to Chiku Shan on the ferry, landing it at the usual dock. Then, the commander's detachment will pick it up. It is a simple cargo delivery.
If it is so simple, then why does the commander need us? He can order his troops to get it.
The commander does not want certain elements of the Chiku Shan resistance movement to know about the cargo. He believes that some officers in his detachment have been bribed to pass on sensitive information.
How do we know that you represent the commander? I have seen him in action. He is extremely brutal. Very brutal. I cannot envisage him sending a well-known smuggler on such a mission.
I have a letter of marque with his personal seal requesting my assistance in the matter.
Why did he involve you?
Because I am the best navigational pilot in the quadrant. Do you have any employees who know the AD-4512 better than I do?
Our ships do not go to such places.
Even for 140,000 coin, split 50-50?
Maybe, just maybe, the 30-70 split, but not less.
I see it in your eyes. You want to make this deal. I'll offer 40-60, and I'll take the 40%.
My friend, we have a deal. One clandestine shipment for the esteemed commander. As you said, a plan that makes you money, makes me money, and provides invaluable assistance to our mutual friends, the Nata Vavra. A most satisfactory deal.
After Faye had left, Abaye Feng made a gesture that both of sons recognized. When they had their payment in their hands, they would kill the smuggler. No need for sharing. For his part, Faye was genuinely amazed by the conversation. He had entered the shipping company offices knowing none of the particulars that he presented. He did not know that the cargo would be picked up at the location P-595 in the AD-4512 asteroid belt. He did not know that he carried a letter of marque from the commander. He did not even know why he had been selected to be involved in the Enterprise. Nor did he realize that the entire conversation had been the work of the Yukimonogakure warrior monks and their newly rediscovered magical powers.
I appreciate your energy and enthusiasm as I retell this well-known story. There is even a song that I have often heard while traveling about Rouge 858. It is about the battle for the Lucky Six ferry craft at location P-595. That song even names each of the heroes from the Chikushan resistance movement who seized the ship. In historical truth, it was an extremely brief affair. MNP Far Fire Kronbo Gush brought the ferry craft safely through the asteroid belt and then docked it exactly where he had been told. The resistance raiders were quickly aboard. They met no resistance and were able to rapidly bring the old craft under their complete control. When the resistance commander explained their intentions, only two of the more than 70 crew members objected. The rest were thrilled at the opportunity to escape the brutal Nata Vavra. Now, Senior Captain Far Fire Kronbo Gush had both a craft and a trained crew for the escape. He chose to rename the Lucky Six. It would now be named for the noble people. It would be the Chikushan.
My former business partner, Mr. Raiji Feng. I know that your father sent you on this expedition because he sought to do me harm, once full payment had been made. Of course, you now know there will be no payment. It was a ruse to bring your ferry craft into the asteroid belt, where the Nata Vavra do not operate. Former business partner, you still are of some use to our operation. However, if you choose not to cooperate, then we can leave you here at location P-595 with the two crew members who did not want to join us. The choice is yours.
I am sure, under the present circumstances, my father and my brother would wish me to cooperate with you. I am also aware that the seizure of this craft could not be satisfactorily explained to the Nat of Avra. They would demand their retribution. At a minimum, that would mean the loss of our extensive business interests. It could also mean our execution.
Know this for certain. If you, your father, or your brother do anything to harm this mission, then it will mean your immediate, assured execution. We all know that none of you are trustworthy. However, none of you are foolish. There is no advantage to duplicity. You'll be dead.
Chiku Shan has flourished in the shadow of the monastery for 10,000 generations. The monastery that is the home of the Yukimonogakari warrior monks, whose magic and goodness have brought peace, prosperity, and plenty. Since the very beneficial and extremely courageous warrior monks meditate in total silence, there is need for one to speak for them. It is my honor to be their voice. As it was my father's honor and his father's honor, going back countless generations. Their ethical morality, their magic, and their unequaled courage comes from their silence. By listening to what is, they have learned what is behind, what undergirds, what the what is. That which was. Before the what is came about. Young sons and daughters. Listen well. This is a primary truth. Mind is substantial. Real, matter is not. Matter comes from mind. Mind is whole. Unbounded. Unlimited. Seamless. Not constrained. When mind becomes discrete, matter emerges. Things are mind becoming discrete. Plants and animal and other living beings are mind becoming discrete. Humans are mind becoming discrete. There are no discrete individuals. All is mind. There is no separateness. All is one. All is mind. When the Nata Vavra invaded Chiku Shan, they brought a magic that the monk warriors could not defeat. It was a magic made from noise. A loud, disorganized clamor. Turmoil. Commotion. Disorder. Chaos. A million, billion clanging cymbals without a melody. Noise with no purpose. Noise without function. Our three red suns had always brought clarity and purpose. Now fog, vapors, and haze block our vision. We lack clarity. We lack purpose. We are most forlorn. Then, while in brutal slavery, the Yukimonogakari warrior monks rediscovered silence. Directed, purposeful silence. Such silence can shape the will of humans, especially those who are weak and easily distracted. Once they had regained the weapon of silence, the Yukimonogakari warrior monks developed a strategy. A plan to defeat the Nata Vavra. A plan to move the Chiku Shan peoples to a safe place. A place in another quadrant, where they would not be tormented by such demons. a place where their magic and their goodness would abound. A new home with peace, prosperity, and plenty.
To the people of the Chikushan province, listen well. This is Commander Lin Gulatan from the 77th Military Corps of the Grand Army of Natavabra. I am speaking to you directly on behalf of our most magnificent leader. He believes that some in the Chikushan province have become lazy and no longer respect the value of manual work. To that end, I am announcing a mandatory re-education labor camp for our subjects in the province. Our subjects will be retrained and re-educated to accord with the desires of our most magnificent leader. While being trained in the labor camp, subjects will also complete an infrastructure project of importance on the Natavavra home world. Members of the 77th Military Corps will assist subjects to volunteer for this important assignment.
The loudspeaker announcement had used the term volunteer for this important assignment. No one in their right mind would ever volunteer to go to a Natavavra, mandatory, re-education labor camp. Since the Natavavra had invaded Chikushan, daily living was brutal for the everyday citizens. A labor re-education camp would be many times worse. Commander Lin Gulatan knew what the conditions were in the re-education labor camps. He knew because he had once supervised one. He knew that no one would volunteer. No. He expected that his troops would have to coerce volunteers by the most extreme methods, and he had already given orders to do so. Then, to his complete surprise, over 30,000 Chikushan people showed up on the main ferry dock begging to be taken away to the labor camp. No coercion was necessary. They simply arrived by their own free choice. Indeed, as Commander Lin Gulatan reported to his military superiors, they had actually volunteered.
Mind is substantial. Real, matter is not. Matter comes from mind. Mind is whole. Unbounded. Unlimited. Seamless. Not constrained. There are no discrete individuals. All is mind. There is no separateness. All is one. All is mind.
Commander Lin Gulatan, this ferry craft is now very crowded, well beyond its stated capacity. It poses a clear danger to those aboard. I recommend removing your military personnel. No point risking your exemplary detachment for such a routine crossing. My own crew is sufficient for any potential security situations.
I agree with your suggestion. I see no need for my troops to remain aboard. Besides, these folks seem like such a happy group. Listen, they are singing.
Oh.
I am going to briefly stop my narrative and ask our orchestra to play the song that has become the national anthem of the Chikushan people on Rouge 858. That was wonderful. Superb musicians. Performing with such vitality. While this song has become much beloved, in historical fact, it was created many generations after the old fairy craft left the docks of your original home world. Nevertheless, historians have found proof that as the fairy craft left its docks, the Chikushan people who were aboard were singing. You are a people of song. You are indeed a people of joy.
The old ferry craft was woefully overloaded. Its official capacity was for 1,700 passengers. When it left the docks, it had over 37,000. When the archaic thorium engines were running well, the old ferry could manage a speed of just less than 1 light-year. When they were not, it barely crawled through space. And, with 37,000 passengers jammed aboard, its speed fell even more. Now, the Nata Vavra military had used top-of-the-line heavy cruisers to support its invasion of Chikushan. They were very fast and armed with latest Selux du Caisson. Very rapid fire. Long range. Devastating. The passengers aboard the old ferry craft may have been singing because they sensed the possibility of freedom. Nonetheless, they were almost immediately in mortal danger. As soon as the old ferry left its established route and turned 136 degrees to its port side, the Nata Vavra commander, Lin Gu Ladin, knew that he had been tricked. He instantaneously ordered the Nata Vavra heavy cruisers in pursuit. Kill them. Obliterate them. Leave nothing. Not one speck. Not one molecule.
Mind is significant. It exists. Has substance. Is real, matter is not. Matter comes from mind. Mind is whole. Unbounded. Unlimited. Seamless. Not constrained. There are no discrete individuals. All is mind. There is no separateness. All is one. All is mind. The Nata Vavra commander, Lin Gu Ladin, was wrong. He believed the massive explosions from his powerful Selux du Caisson would defeat the people of joy. The people of song. The people protected by the silence of the magical Yukimonogakari warrior monks. It was an ancient fairy craft powered by non-functional thorium engines, the Nata Vavra commander believed. An easy target. He ordered all of the heavy cruisers to fire their powerful Selux du Caisson. Move in close and fire. Cannot miss at such a short distance. However, mind is significant. It exists. Has substance. Is real, matter is not. Matter comes from mind. Mind is whole. Unbounded. Unlimited. Seamless. Not constrained. we chant the ancient refrain. Fragments. Widely dissipated. Weak. Not cannons firing with massive explosions of highly concentrated force, but confetti. Not a tsunami, but the smoothest of ripples. Not a mighty roar, but the gentlest of whispers. Mind alone is real.
I will take this rusty collection of bolts to where the Natavavra are afraid to go. Deep into the AD4512 asteroid belt. Deeper than even I have gone. Their weapons are extremely powerful, and they can reach incredible distances. We need to be deep enough, so those weapons do not harm us. The old ferry craft was woefully overloaded, with over 37,000 passengers crammed onto its 13 decks. Its ancient thorium engines were not reliable and often broke down. It was also a craft designed for open space. Dodging fast-moving space rocks required an agility that it did not have. Most troubling was that when the ferry craft had been at its original docks, no food or other supplies had been loaded. It was to be the briefest of trips. Now, deep in the AD4512 asteroid belt, there was another, even more serious, problem. The asteroid belt offered no opportunities to obtain foodstuffs. Soon, famine would overwhelm the formerly named Lucky Six ferry. When the passengers began to realize that the possibility of starvation was very real, Abaye Fang and his two sons staged their putative revolt. They denied it, of course.
The Natavavra are a lazy people. They have found that conquering other peoples and then turning those who are captured into mindless servile subservient slaves keeps the Natavavra from having to do work. And so, it is with the worm-like Ainku who now serve them. Once the Ainku were a proud and creative species who practiced peace among themselves and their neighboring peoples. Then, many generations ago, the Natavavra conquered the Ainku and made them into the slovenly creatures we see now. The ones who clean the floors and walls. The ones who collect and dispose of the dung pots. The ones who digest the garbage into composting material. A species without memory or problem-solving capacities. No feelings. No emotions. Take orders. Work. No grumbling. No threats. Take orders. Work.
While Faya and the leaders of the Chiku Shan did not trust Abaye Fang and his two sons, Rijoi and Nuzuka, other matters were more pressing. And Abaye Fang and his sons were left to their own devices. Unfortunately, Abaye Fang and his two sons planned a revolt. They planned to return the ferry back to the Natavavra. As everyone knew, that was a return back to slavery. Seeing the desperate conditions on board the ferry craft, they decided the time was right. Having no weapons or minions they could control, they developed a plan to use the Ainku, forming them into a single herd. Then they would use this herd to isolate and trap the captain and his crew. It did not go well for them. The Ainku do not naturally form herds. In fact, the Natavavra had bred almost all social instincts from them. They sought compliant beasts who did solitary assignments. Nonetheless, Abaye Fang and his two sons set about their plan to herd the Ainku. It was not a well-conceived plan. Various Ainku were scattered across the 13 decks of the ferry craft. Nuzuka Fang was the most aggressive of the trio, and initially he had some success, moving some of the Ainku down a couple of decks to where his father had created a temporary pen. Nuzuka Fang yelled, whistled, and screamed at the Ainku. Kicked them. Beat them with whips. But, again, the ferry craft was extremely crowded, and the Ainku had to be moved over and around and under passengers. However, even his extreme cruelty did not have much success. Most Ainku stood where they had been placed, not moving. They were used to cruelty. It was their lot. Their role. Stand where placed. Do work assigned. Accept abuse without protest. And some of the Ainku that he had succeeded in bringing down to his father's temporary pen, soon left it to return to their assigned location, to do the work they had been told to do. While Nuzuka Feng had some success, herding a half dozen down to his father, his brother, Rijoi used the same cruelty but had no success at all. He was attempting to move the Ainku down from the upper levels, but these were the most crowded levels, and he could make no progress. It would have been comical if it had not been so cruel. Finally, Captain Faya and his crewmates had had enough. They stopped Abaye Feng and his two sons.
So, Abaye Feng, your plan did not work. Even these mindless beings could see your intentions.
We had no intention of doing you harm. We simply gathered the Ainku together, so we could harvest the latex on them. They are lice-like parasites that grow rapidly on the Ainku. I know that the Natavavra often eat the latex, saying it is a special delicacy. My sons and I were simply doing a service of bringing the Ainku together into a herd to harvest the latex more easily.
By your attempt at treachery, you have shown us how to stave off starvation. It is my determination that you will continue to tend the Ainku, shepherding them, harvesting the latex so the Chikushan people will have enough to eat. Our thanks for your innovative solution.
We are of noble rank. Such work is for peasant stock.
You will do this work and do it well, or you will die. Your choice. The old ferry craft stayed hidden in the asteroid belt for 1,269 long nights. For the passengers on the overcrowded craft, these were indeed long nights. The AD-4512 asteroid belt blocked all the light from the beloved three red suns. It was a time of perpetual darkness and fear. Fear that the Natavavra military would overcome its own concerns and begin operations inside the asteroid belt. A small military unit with light weapons could easily overwhelm them. Its only protection was to remain deep inside the AD-4512. But to do so risked being struck by the millions of fast-moving frozen rocks that whizzed by from multiple directions. Captain Faya knew the AD-4512 better than anyone. He had confidence that he could anticipate the paths of the largest of the asteroids. They did not worry him. But, the smaller ones did. Gravity works in strange ways on smaller objects. They are pulled toward one larger object and then another and then a third, a fourth, and a fifth. At any instant, a small, unseen, but fast-moving, rock might crash into the ancient ferry craft. Its thin superstructure had been designed for smooth, open spaces, not intensely packed rocky domains. Then, there were concerns over the thorium engines. They would often make an unholy sound and then cease working altogether. Without them, it would grow cold or maybe, alternatively, hot or maybe the air would become unbreathable, or maybe the very limited sanitation systems would clog and backflow. An overcrowded, uncomfortable situation would grow far worse. Only the hope of freedom in a new place, far from the terrors of the Natavavra sustained the people. They would endure. Yet another long night. They would eat yet another nauseating, garbage meal, an indigestible mush made of crushed latex parasites plucked from the slimy skin of the Ainku. Abaye Feng and his two sons, Rijoi and Nuzuka, had lied when they called the latex parasites a most special delicacy.
The Chiku Shan people survived their bleak time in the AD 4512 by dreaming of freedom and making dark, comedic jokes about how bad the indigestible parasite mush tasted. I have decided it is time to leave the AD 4512 asteroid belt. I believe that the Nata Vavra military has given up pursuing us. We will exit, not the way that we came in, but by another route, one that I once used during my smuggler days. Then, we'll head for the colony Cefu 1449, which is nominally affiliated with the Kingdom Jeji. It is a pretty wide open place. Shouldn't give us any problems. When Faye had made his earlier trip to the colony Cefux 1449, back while he was still a smuggler, it had taken him only a third of an epoch. That, of course, was with a much faster, much lighter craft. In contrast, it took the renamed ferry craft, the Chiku Shan, 13.79 epochs to traverse the distance. Almost 50 times longer. Just after the ancient ferry craft entered open space on a heading to the colony Cefux 1449, the thorium engines failed completely. There was no repairing them. Captain Faye had been operating them at one-fifth of their capacity to preserve precious fuel, but operating the old engines at such low capacity meant that scum developed. Eventually the scum clogged the system. The engines could run no more.
Stopping the story at this point, so the Honorable Chiku Shan people of Rouge 858 can create a special stink. On my home world, Sasko, we call it a fart, releasing smelly air from the anus. However, on this special day of celebration, the Chiku Shan people call it aroma making. On my count, I ask that all of the citizens of Rouge 858 together make aroma. It is a sacred act in honor of the bravery of the Chiku Shan people on that ancient fairy craft. Are you ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Make aroma.
The magical Yukimonogakari warrior monks have never studied high-energy plasma physics, or metastable, metallic hydrogen, or nanoparticle thrust systems. Rather, they study silence in its many permutations. Through focused concentration, substances can transform themselves, become that which they are not. Or, more precisely, were not before. Altered. Transformed. Converted.
Chemists say that hydrogen is literally everywhere. It is both the simplest and the most abundant element. Hydrogen is most often encountered as a gas, but under intense pressure, it can become a liquid. Under even more pressure and with extreme heat, it can become a metal. It is extremely lightweight, low in volume, and provides an extremely robust detonation force. It is, in short, an extremely efficient and powerful rocket propellant. Metastable metallic hydrogen has the additional property of remaining as a metal even after the high pressures under which it was created are lowered. Once created, it stays in the metallic form, it does not revert back. It is stable. I had an intense, vivid dream last night that may solve the problems we have been struggling with.
Our ancient thorium engines have failed, and there is no means of repairing them. Without them, we are frozen in empty space. However, in my dream, I saw that we could replace them with a rocket propellant made from metastable, metallic hydrogen. I saw the equations, and I think it will work. Metastable, metallic hydrogen is packed with power. Many times more powerful than the rocket propellants of the past, the ones that our ancestors used to first blast into space. Unfortunately, it is difficult to manufacture, especially on an overloaded ferry craft like this one. The good news is that we probably won't need much. Instead of using it to propel the whole craft, we could use it to accelerate a stream of nanoparticles. In the vacuum of deep space, the accelerated nanoparticles could propel us at a reasonable speed, so that we could reach the colony Cepheu-144-9. There, we could find some other transport to someplace we could go more permanently. One important consideration to remember is that metastatic, metallic hydrogen burns at extremely high temperatures, temperatures that would melt the craft and all of the citizens that we are carrying. So, we would burn the metallic hydrogen in an organic liquid which would make the process considerably more manageable, at temperatures we could withstand. It is also why we would use the accelerating nanoparticles actually to propel the ferry craft. Here's our approach. First, we need to make metastable, metallic hydrogen. So, we take hydrogen in its gaseous form, subject it to high heat and very intense pressure, and, in that way, we force that gas to become a metal. We keep applying heat and pressure, and, eventually, it becomes metastable, remaining a metal even after the heat is reduced and the pressure's lowered. Then we slowly dissolve it in a liquid and burn it. And, thus, we have rocket propellant for the nanoparticles. It was a throwback to earlier times when rockets pushed craft through space. Now they warp space-time and spring forward using an elastic distortion. Far faster. Far more efficient. But, the decrepit ferry craft was itself a throwback to earlier times. It ran old-fashioned thorium engines. It moved slowly, even when it was pushed to its maximum performance. And, it was overloaded with 37,000 people. People who had lived simple lifestyles with almost no technology. To manufacture the metastable, metallic hydrogen, we'll need extremely high temperatures and very intense pressures. Fortunately, we won't need much. Still, we'll need lots of electrical energy, probably about as much as a medium-sized city uses in a month. What can we do to generate electricity? After much discussion, they decided on yet another throwback mechanism. This one was a throwback to even earlier times, back when human exertion did the hard work. They constructed three large generators, each powered by 180 Chikushan people pushing long poles in a clockwise direction around a large circular screw, one that turned a stator magnet turning amidst electrical wires. The kind of mechanism used in old-time hydroelectric generating plants. Only on the old ferry craft, everything was turned by human exertion. Each team worked a shift and then was replaced by another. Slowly, slowly, slowly turning the magnet stators, generating electricity. Today, the people of the new Chikushan believe that it was human power supplemented by a little magic. Magic, of course, provided by the Yukimonogakure warrior monks, meditating on pure silence.
I am stopping the story here because all of you know what comes next. Yes. It is time for everyone to make a special stink. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Make aroma. You may remember that the metastable, metallic hydrogen had to be dissolved in an organic liquid to make the burning controllable. Without the liquid, it would be a massive, superheated conflagration that would devour both the ferry craft and all of the Chikushan citizens. So, they needed an organic liquid, and they needed lots of it. They asked themselves, what do we have lots of that we can easily turn into a liquid, organic solvent to burn the metallic hydrogen in? Well, they said, just smell this craft. We have 37,000 Chikushan people eating only an indigestible parasite mush. They were a craft with a most distinctive, flatulent odor. That, my friends, is an almost unlimited source of methane gas, which can readily be transformed into a liquid. Human push power. Flatulent odor. And that is how the renamed ferry craft, the Chikushan, propelled itself across space. Are you ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Make aroma. Ah! A perfume of incredible purity, one that creates delightful images of pure pleasure.
Mind alone has significance. It exists, has substance, is real. Matter is not. Matter comes from mind. Mind is whole, unbounded, unlimited, seamless, not constrained. Silence. Profound silence. All-encompassing silence. That alone is how mind is known.
It took the old ferry craft nearly 13.79 epochs to make it to the Sifuk's 144-9 colony. That is nearly 50 times longer than it had taken the then smuggler to make a similar trip with his ultra-fast blockade runner. Nonetheless, the decrepit, old, renamed ferry craft, the Chikushan, made it. It made it with over 37,000 passengers. It had carried the Chikushan people from slavery and eventual destruction to freedom and the endless possibilities of a new start. MNP Far, Faya, Kronbo Gutch became a national hero to the Chikushan people in their new homeland on Roush 858.
So, I end my retelling of this unique story. Sasko extends its warmest greetings to the Honorable Chikushan people of Roush 858, on this auspicious day of celebration. The day celebrating your liberation from tyranny. We affirm the strong bond between our peoples. It was a most fortuitous encounter between our dominion's envoy and the bedraggled, but heroic citizens on board the decrepit ferry craft. We were more than happy to assist in your relocation. Now, not only are we proximal neighbors, we are also close friends. Our peoples intermarry, trade with each other, share technological innovations, and defend each other's freedom, and we do so in an epoch fraught with endless military conflicts. My father and I are especially appreciative of the role that the Yukimonogakari warrior monks have played in the defense of Sasuke. I began this retelling by sharing how the descendants of MNP Farfire Chromebowguch have fared since your arrival in this lovely and fertile place. His many descendants are now very numerous. By our best estimate, there are 21,800 direct descendants of Faya, living in either the Dominion of Sasuke or here among the Chikushan people of Rush 858. Thank you all again for granting me the honor of retelling this incredible story. Enjoy your day of celebration. Enjoy your well-earned freedom.
Thank you. A Palooza Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.